This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're listening to The Property Show in the Morning Run. I'm Sim Wee Boon. Traditionally, owning a home is seen as a goal for most individuals in terms of economic and personal security. You work hard, you buy a house, and you raise your family there. But as prices increase, wages remain stagnant, and even the approach towards owning a home changes in terms of what people want and what they expect out of it. Owning a home for the average household in Malaysia is becoming less and less desirable and less achievable. So joining me to discuss this is Dr. Carmelo Felito, CEO of Center for Market Education and a senior fellow at the think tank Ideas. Now, Dr. Carmelo, you were recently on RERA's Housing Conference 2020 talking about the housing market and the housing crisis here. Maybe you can give a short summary on kind of like your take on the Malaysian housing crisis.
Hi, good morning, Sim, and thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be at the Property Show and on BFM in general. I think that if we look a little bit with a longer perspective, what we realize is that the Malaysian property market is at the end of a cycle. Of a business cycle, which in that conference I called a juggler cycle. This is just a convention among certain economists. A juggler cycle is a cycle of a duration of around 7 to 10 years. More or less, we have seen an expansionary trend in the property market starting after the financial crisis in 2008. And the cycle reached its peak in terms in particular of price overheating around 2013. And since 2014, it started to moderate. And now we really see that we are at the end of the tail where prices are very stable. They even don't keep pace with inflation. And in the past few years, wages have grown faster than housing prices. So this is where we stand at the moment. And probably the point from which every further analysis should start from.
But given what you're saying, on the ground, people feel that housing prices are increasing while their wages remain stagnant. Have your findings shown otherwise?
Yes, definitely. Statistical evidences are showing a different trend. Obviously, people, as always, the perception to feel everything as expensive. But if we look at figures in the past 3-4 years, houses prices have remained basically constant or grew very, very moderately. And definitely they grew at a slower pace than wages. 2020 could be an exception because of the effects of the pandemic. But let's say focusing our analysis until the pre-pandemic, salaries were catching up. Of course, the jump that happened in prices between 2008 and 2013 was a big jump. And this is what created that perception that houses were becoming expensive for Malaysians. And they were indeed becoming more expensive. But this trend now is inverted. But of course, this inversion will take time to be perceived.
What would you say is the issue faced by Malaysians now? Is it still a mismatch of affordability? Is it still the developers and the housing prices not coming back to reality? Or are we just heading towards an uncertain future because of COVID-19?
Obviously, COVID-19 will play a role, but it is just a role of accelerating things that I believe were already in motion. And I'm happy, actually, that the tone of the discussion also on affordability changed, at least at a certain extent. So here we have different things that we have to keep in mind. First of all, Malaysia is one of the countries with the highest percentage, with the highest ratio of home ownership, okay? Something like 77%.
Globally, so, is that?
In Malaysia, yes, globally. Yep. So Malaysians own houses. Mm. The issue of affordability is a complicated one, and maybe we will come back to it in a second. But I want to stress a point that is very clear from the latest statistics from NEPIC, so from Q3 2020. Out of, if you look at the residential market, out of 8,600 units of overhang, we have something like around 5 to 6 thousand that are below 700K. And if we look at below 500K, we have around 5,000, okay? So the great majority of the overhang in the market is within the segment that can be defined as affordable. This is something that should a little bit change our focus in the discussion on affordability. So I think that we have mainly two things to keep in mind. One, what I just mentioned, the homeownership rate is very high in Malaysia. So demand is simply not there because people already own a house. Secondly, I believe that, and this is a qualitative analysis, very difficult to catch from a quantitative perspective, but we are experiencing a shift in individual preferences among the youth that are more related to flexibility and mobility. So young people in particular wants to travel, want to explore the world, want to be open to opportunities in different countries, in different situations. And obviously these choices are not consistent with the financial burden of buying a house, unless your family is already rich enough to buy something for you.
What does affordable housing really mean in a Malaysian context? Because you see this word being thrown around a lot, being said a lot, even with the government officials, to developers. But it's a very complex issue when you talk about it. In your take, what really is affordable housing here in Malaysia? What does it mean to afford a house?
Again, as you mentioned, is a very complex situation. And I think that the confusions arise because we mix the discussion on affordable houses, which is something strictly related to the behavior of the property market, with the discussion on poverty. So when we look at a certain project or on a certain home, we should ask, I cannot afford that home because it's indeed overpriced, or I cannot afford because I'm poor. Okay, and the conversation about these two points is too often mixed up, and then we can't figure out the right solution to the problem. So we have a poverty issue and we have an affordability issue. If we look at affordability from a pure econ perspective, I think that the best way to look at it is to compare market prices with cost of production. In a traditional in economic theory, we say that in a competitive market and in equilibrium market, the price, the selling price, is equal or close to the production cost, where in the production cost, we also include a natural margin for the entrepreneur, for the developers in this case. So one point that probably we should analyze more is how much market prices are close or far from construction costs. And this will give us a better figure about the actual affordability or the actual level of equilibrium prices in Malaysia. This is one point. Second point is, I think traditionally in Malaysia, but not only in Malaysia, everywhere in the world, because it's very politically appealing, we have discussed affordability by looking at poor people and considering a task of the government to provide a property to the poor people. And the category of poor people can be defined in different ways. And I think that this is a very limiting perspective, because a poor person with a roof remain a poor person. Obviously, to have a roof is a good point, But the task, I think, that of policymakers should be to drive those people away from poverty rather than keep them poor but with a shelter. This is, I think, a radical change in perspective that I think sooner or later will happen. And the key factor that we have to keep into account in making this shift in policy approach is to include into the conversation the expression social mobility. So to be poor is not a sin, it's not a problem per se. As far as there are institutions and an economic framework that allow poor people to move away from that condition if they want to, if they deserve to, if they work hard, and etc. And in this context, to develop affordable homes for the poor in very remote areas in order to keep this property cheap, it also stuck people into a condition of poverty because they remain far away from good job opportunities, and therefore we remain stuck into poverty without moving to social mobility. So we should reconsider housing policy in a way to move people closer to good job opportunities and create a condition for social mobility. One proposal that I made was, an example, the rent support. Somehow to ask developers to reserve certain units in projects that are in good locations to people that can't afford to rent fully the unit, and the price that cannot be afforded by the poor is supported by the government, helping the people to get out of a poverty condition and being in the condition eventually to rent by themselves or to buy a house, not because the government finance their purchase, but because they exit out of poverty, and if they want to buy a house, they are free to do so. And I think this is the big change in policy perception, in policy making, and in the perception of affordability that we need to do now in Malaysia.
Okay, very interesting. But we're going to take a pause on that and take a short break for some messages. We'll be right back, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're tuned in to The Proper Show on The Morning Run. I'm Sim Wee Boon. And with me here today is Dr. Carmelo Felito, CEO of the Center for Market Education and a senior fellow at the think tank Ideas. The topic of the day is housing in Malaysia and the affordability issue. And earlier, before the break, Dr. Carmelo, we kind of like brought up the subject of the government and the policies and how we can rethink the approach towards owning a house and affordability. So let's talk about the role of the government now. For the longest time, our government has been somewhat obsessed with home ownership. A lot of the policies that they've pushed are even for, you know, the B40 and whatnot, are towards home, owning a home, you know, even most evident with Prima, PR1MA. And you're advocating for kind of like a change in that perception. But policy change is one thing, but how exactly can we kind of like push this radical approach towards focusing less on owning a home, but more on increasing wages and moving towards better work opportunity, social mobility, as you say?
I think that one point that we always stress at the Center for Market Education is the importance of trade-off. So this stress of home ownership in Malaysia has contributed to create another problem, which I consider much more important in this moment, which is household debt, which is close to 85% of the GDP. So when a government implements a policy, they always have to think what they are giving up by trying to achieve a certain target. And surely we have already a high rate of home ownership in Malaysia, but we have a much higher rate of household debt. And I think this is a different task that the government, a different problem that the government should tackle. So household debt is a higher priority in this moment. Coming back to the role of government in housing policy, I think that the best driver for a change is reality. The government realized that Prima and similar schemes are not working. And a few months ago, the Minister of Housing declare that they are going to move toward rental schemes rather than home ownership scheme, which is something that I pushed for many years now. And I think this is the right direction. As I mentioned just before the break, I think that one solution could be to sit down with the developers and to identify those projects in locations that are positive for promoting social mobility, in which a share of units can be reserved for poor people and supported in terms of rent scheme support. The developers are the ones that know the market and know where to build and where it is profitable to build. So deciding about a project, building it, developing and running a project will remain a task of the developers. But then the government will step in blocking, let's say, certain units for social mobility purposes and subsidizing the rent, to make it simple. So the government will not incur in a loss because a part of the rent that can't be afforded by the people, by the tenants, will be subsidized by the government. So this is how, more or less, the scheme would work.
But how would you get the developers to agree to that? Because, you know, I think ultimately for the developers, they will look at it like, look, it's capitalism. I want to make the most money I can. To them, it will sound like the government is trying to get involved in their business.
Well, you know, in this sense, there is no risk and no loss for the developers because the unit is rented out at market price. So what the government is going to subsidize is a market price rental. So there is in these terms for the developers is even more safe because the money, rather than coming from the tenant itself, are coming at least at a certain extent from the government. So this is a very minimum interference with the market, in which the big responsibility about the projects is left in developer hands, and rental remains at market price and not at somehow a controlled price.
What about public housing then? The government fully going into it, providing house for rent even and for sale? I mean, does that seem like somewhat of a viable solution, or is it just part of the story?
I think that we have plenty of examples to see that when the government try to be an entrepreneur, usually the results are not that good, in particular if they operate outside of competitive conditions. So if they become the only ones supplying a certain kind of product, usually they are not be able to make the right entrepreneurial decisions. And this is normal, because when you operate out of the market, you don't get market signals, and therefore you don't know what to deliver. So I think that the government should focus first of all, in the very poor people, on the very poor people. So not talking about the B40 or the B20, but looking really at the people that are living in conditions of extreme poverty, and think at the best way to provide a shelter for them. And I still believe that a solution that involves private developers, a sort of partnership, can be the best way to provide something that is not only a temporary solution in providing a shelter to the people, but improving conditions of the people and eventually bring to the market a product that can remain in the market also in the long run.
Are there any countries around the world that you think that Malaysia can model itself after, or perhaps take inspiration from, in terms of addressing its housing issues?
Well, I think that, every country has its own peculiarity because of individual preferences, because of history of land property. Malaysia is very peculiar on the freehold and non-freehold, the government ownership of the land. So I think that Malaysia should think to implement its own way. Mm. Most of the ideas that I mentioned here have been brought into theory by many authors, but we have very limited experience of really having a market approach to the affordability issue. And probably Malaysia could become driver for inspiring other countries rather than trying to copy solutions that have been implemented elsewhere.
Okay, well, lastly, I want to end with kind of like your outlook then for 2021. You know, given COVID-19's context last year and the vaccine is somewhat in sight, but we're still feeling a lot of the economic ramifications and, you know, these recent spikes in cases and what I mean. What's your outlook like for 2021 in the housing market? And more importantly, what needs to be done by perhaps the private players and the government to taper and control and maybe make sense of the housing market in 2021?
Okay, I think that as we have seen at the end of 2020, the market is somehow reviving in terms of number of transactions, but is declining in terms of the total value of the transaction. So it means that more things are happening, but the value, the average value is going down. Most probably, this is a trend that is going to be there for 2021 as well. So we will see a stabilization of these trends. The first part of the year, 2020, was bad, obviously, and then we have seen a recovery. And I think that after the normal rebound, we will see a little bit of a flat scenario. But to look at this flat scenario, we should, I think, have a very disaggregate insight, because in a climate of uncertainty, what we will see probably is an increase of transaction for speculative reasons. So buying for security or for reaping a profit in the future, while it will be more it is more conservative the outlook for those purchasing that are actually intended for living in that properties, because we are living in a moment of financial insecurity. So it is not wise to take long-term financial commitments if you are not financially very secure and strong. So my suggestion is really for analysts and developers to take a look at a more disaggregate level for the trends of the property market. From the policy perspective, I think that one point that really the government should focus on is the household debt and be sure that credit conditions do not worsen, in the sense that people don't make a financial mistake. This should be really the priority. And if I may say, try to think about these suggestions that I've made in terms of policy change and policy perspective. And hopefully we, as a Center for Market Education, can be our contribution to the general discussion and in providing solutions that are beneficial for the nation and the racket.
All right. Thank you very much for doing this. That's all the time we have for today's property show. That was Dr. Carmelo Felito, CEO of Center for Market Education and a senior fellow at the think tank Ideas. I'm Sim Wee Boon, signing off for the morning run. We've got the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, followed by Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.